It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We discussed the statewide action plan for homelessness and efforts to help bring an end to homelessness and housing insecurity. This conversation is one in the coming weeks where we dive more deeply into this issue that touches communities. Thousands of Wisconsin residents are homeless, according to the National Alliance to End Homelessness. Call in at any point in the discussion to raise your question. Add your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Michael Bassford is director of the Interagency Council on Homelessness, the council part of the Wisconsin Department of Administration. Michael, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much for having me today.
The homeless population in our state has been trending downward in recent years, according to point-in-time surveys, those estimates. How accurate are these surveys representing the homeless population?
So the point-in-time count is one way of few in which we are able to gauge the state of homelessness in Wisconsin. And what the point-in-time count is exactly what it says. Communities and agencies all over the country at the Department of Housing and Urban Development's requirements go out every January in the last week of January and count the number of people who are experiencing homelessness in emergency shelters and transitional housing, as well as those who are on the street, those who are sleeping in tents or in cars or just outside or in other places not meant for human habitation.
Before we go further, can you help us with that distinction in terminology between sheltered individuals and unsheltered homeless?
Certainly. All over the country and communities are facilities that will take people in for the night to get them off the street. Those are emergency shelters. And so we count people that are in those situations as being sheltered, as opposed to anybody who is sleeping outside, which we call unsheltered.
And you say that the number of unsheltered homeless is growing in Wisconsin. Why are more people sleeping outside?
Well, there's a wide variety of reasons as to why people don't go to shelter. But the largest reason that we have for unsheltered homelessness and homelessness in general is the lack of available, affordable housing. Especially for people who are at low or extremely low income levels. According to the National Low Income Housing Coalition, we're about 127,000 units short of what we need for our population of low and extremely low income people.
That is a lot. I want to turn to the council releasing a state action plan to address, you know, that and other issues. The 2021 to 2023 plan says the single greatest barrier to securing stable housing is that lack of affordable housing unit availability. So how is the council trying to improve housing availability?
So, I mean, we're looking at all of the different ways that we can we can use resources that are out there and a lot of the best practices that communities have had and other states have had in increasing investments in developing of in housing development. It requires a substantial investment that cannot be denied. But we have learned in the past that it is actually less expensive for communities to put people into housing rather than to keep them on the streets experiencing homelessness.
We're talking about Wisconsin's homeless population. Michael Basford oversees the state's Interagency Council on Homelessness, and you can join in the conversation at any point. Call in with a question. Share your perspectives at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Chris and Delavan. Chris, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just have a question about, it's my perception that a lot of towns and cities and communities that I travel between in southeastern Wisconsin seem to have an affinity for putting in like these, well, they're not building like affordable new homes, and it seems like they're not putting in like affordable, you know, housing apartments or anything like that. It seems like they keep building these super expensive, like luxury apartment complexes. And I was wondering is that an actual trend, or is that just my perception? Because I feel like that just keeps like all living expenses really high and shuts people out.
Chris, thank you. Michael.
So what communities need to do in order to address homelessness and to address this housing gap is to really look at their development plans, you know, and their needs in their community, and to start making policies locally that will make it easier for low-income and multifamily housing to be developed. You're right that an emphasis on producing single-family homes continues, and that has to change. I mean, that's going to be up to each community to look at their specific needs and their specific housing policies, and to make the changes necessary so that we could better develop more and more affordable housing.
And rent is climbing in Wisconsin communities. That's from the National Rental Listing Aggregators. How does that affect people trying to secure stable housing?
It affects them greatly. It has been said that for every $100 increase in rent in an area, the homelessness numbers increase by 9%. That one, I don't think, has been completely researched out, but that's something that's commonly said, and it makes sense. You know, a lot of people who are at low income or extremely low income are either on fixed incomes because they have disabilities, or they're working at minimum wage jobs and have not seen much of an increase in their income over an extended period of time. And whenever the rent goes up, it just creates more and more barriers for these folks. It reduces the amount of housing that is available for them to be able to move into.
Michael Basford leads the Interagency Council on Homelessness. It's part of the state agency, the Wisconsin Department of Administration. As we examine facets of homelessness, call in with a question. You can share your views at any point, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We are having conversations about how to address the needs of people who go without shelter and securing permanent housing in Wisconsin. And there's space to talk as we examine programs to help end homelessness. Call in with the question, share comments at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Michael Basford directs the Interagency Council on Homelessness. Michael, we heard from Carol in Lake Geneva, who thinks that people have a not in my backyard or a NIMBY attitude to affordable housing and multifamily complexes like apartments. And Carol wonders, how do we change that perception?
That's an excellent question. And how we can, make people understand the need in each community to have this kind of development. I'll say this, it is the way we solve homelessness. We can't have this continuing mindset of not in my backyard for development of multifamily and low and housing that is for people who are lower and extremely low income, and then at the same time decry the number of people that we'll see on the street or sleeping in their cars as that number continues to grow. I mean, there is a there is a correlation between the number of housing units available and the number of people that are out there experiencing homelessness and unsheltered homelessness. So how we can get people to change their minds to do that, I don't know. I mean, whoever figures that out should probably get a Nobel Prize. But it's a very tough job, and it's up to every community to take a very deep look at what their needs are.
The state's Budget Writing Committee, Joint Finance Committee, rejected the council's funding request of $12 million for shelter and housing grants. How much money is the state spending to address homelessness?
Not enough. And it has been disappointing that we have not, we've been in successive budgets, been requesting funds to bring it up to adequate levels that we can, fund the agencies all over Wisconsin that are serving the growing number of people. And we're doing this in an atmosphere where for certain programs at the state level, we're spending less money now than we have in the past, from programs such as the Homelessness Prevention Program to the State Shelter Subsidy Grant Program, to the Housing Assistance Program. Back in 2007 and 2008, for those three programs, we were spending more money than we do now. We
So
were
you're
looking.
saying our funding levels now are less than what we were doing for this work on housing insecurity in 2007, 2008?
At the state level, yes. And so when we made budget requests to raise those and other programs to allow us to build that capacity, and also to bring online new programs that have been that are going to be doing things that are proof positive housing diversion, homelessness diversion, housing navigation, funding for landlords for landlord mitigation, if they take risks at housing people that have housing vouchers or that are in programs that are coming from homelessness into housing. We want to be able to help landlords as much as possible. And we can't do that until the legislature and the Joint Finance Committee provide those funds that we ask for.
Let's bring in Dee in McFarland. Dee, hi. What would you like to share?
Hi, I'm just curious to have your speakers address the issue of the need to not only provide housing, but also improve infrastructure, such as public transportation, jobs near housing, affordable daycare. A lot of these communities, McFarland included, we're looking for ways to create affordable housing, but on the flip side, how do we support folks once we get them housed?
Michael.
So that another excellent question. So what we do at the Interagency Council, I mean, we're made up of several different departments in state government, from public instruction to workforce development to health services, Where we're working to really connect the dots between all of those things that the caller mentioned and housing stability. You're absolutely right that just building housing is not going to completely solve the issue for those who are transitioning from homelessness into housing. We need those wraparound services so that if they have mental health issues or substance abuse issues, that they're receiving the help that they need so that they could stay in housing. So that also included in that is a lot of work that we're doing through the Department of Workforce Development to provide job training and job placement and jobs with better wages for people who are experiencing homelessness so that they can be financially stable. And that's a big part of housing security as well. So there are a lot of issues that are connected up through housing and homelessness, just as the caller had mentioned.
Michael Basford with us oversees the state's Interagency Council on Homelessness. Michael, a WPR reporter was reporting on an uptick in homelessness in Milwaukee County recently. Spoke with Rachel Wagner, who recently lost a job and is living in a Milwaukee car park.
I have actually lived at the Hope Park and Ride a couple of different times throughout my life, and this is the worst that I've seen it. It used to be that you couldn't even tell people were staying there. And I would like myself, a person that lives there, for it to be able to get back like that. I don't want to see the trash where I live.
How should communities like Milwaukee address places where homeless people stay on a recurring basis?
Well, I mean, what they should do and what Milwaukee County does very well, I mean, in spite of the fact that that numbers are growing and are concerning there, is that they do provide a fair amount of outreach to those who are staying at park and rides and who are staying in tents and are known in, you know, for in encampments, is to really just flood that zone with supports, have, you know, once you've identified interventions to allow to get people into housing to really push those and to continue that effort until you get everybody out of an encampment situation. What we're seeing a lot of cities around the country that are doing, and this is wrong, is that they're bringing in the police to write a whole bunch of tickets to people who can't afford to pay those tickets, and then we'll have criminal charges on their record, which make it more, which is a continuing spiral that will make it more difficult to achieve housing. And then also, you know, just going in and sweeping out all of their possessions. This never solves any problems. All it does is that it moves people around, makes it harder for them to receive services and to get housing and to get into housing. And by the way, it just costs the taxpayers a lot more money.
You have this biennial action plan. What is the status of the plan? When would the state's current action plan end and a new plan begin?
So we say that the plan was from 21 to 23.
Yes.
We started that work on updating the state plan that we had received. We had received a plan from the previous administration. And although it was from the previous administration, there was a lot that we agreed with on that plan. And we wanted to update it with a few more ideas. And then a pandemic happened. And as we got through the pandemic, we realized we learned a lot, as a matter of fact, from the pandemic in terms of what we need to really address homelessness and the causes of homelessness in Wisconsin. So we finished the plan at the end of 2021. So we haven't really started working on the action items until 2022. And we're continuing to work on that through the end of this. We'll be working on making those complete by the end of next year. And as we're doing that next year, we'll be then drafting an update to the plan for the further next 3 years after next year.
So that that vision is continuing.
Yes.
Yes. Michael, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Kate. Anytime, and I appreciate being on.
Michael Bassford is director of the Interagency Council on Homelessness, the council part of the Wisconsin Department of Administration. And this conversation about homelessness, it continues as we look outside our borders to interventions in two western states, Utah and Washington. Call in with your question. Share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As thousands of Wisconsinites are homeless, we go outside our borders now to examine the work of rapidly rehousing people and interventions underway in Washington and Utah. You can join this conversation along the way. Call in with the question. Add your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Wayne Niederhauser is State Homeless Coordinator of Utah. Wayne, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate. Good morning.
Good morning. Ted Kelleher here as well, Policy Director of the Housing Division within the Washington State Department of Commerce. Ted, welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for inviting me.
Ted, let's start with you. Washington having the fifth highest per capita homeless rate in the country. That's according to Results Washington, which tracks statewide figures. What are the greatest challenges facing your state's homeless population?
Yeah, thank you. There's a lot of dynamics in homelessness. It's hard to tease them all out. But some of the leading factors in Washington, anyway, is that we have, you know, very fast population growth. We haven't been constructing enough housing, both on market rate housing and, affordable housing, subsidized housing. That's been a significant factor. We've been successful in increasing incomes and, you know, very low unemployment rates, but there's a really strong correlation between rents and income. So as incomes, median household incomes, middle incomes in our largest county, King County, where Seattle is, have soared to more than $106,000 a year, it makes it really difficult for people, for instance, are relying on a disability payment or Social Security, which is the same no matter where you are in the country, to find affordable housing at that level. So, you know, that combination of factors have just really put the squeeze over the last decade, and it's only gotten, you know, the pandemic made things even worse.
Intensified. Now, turning to Utah, Wayne, how often are people experiencing housing insecurity in your state?
Wow, Kate, we track a lot of data. And 8,700 people experienced homelessness for the first time in the state of Utah in 2022. We got to go upstream and look at prevention. And Ted lays out the cost of housing and how it affects homelessness. California has the highest rate of homelessness in the country, 44 per 10,000. Mississippi has the lowest, 5 per 10,000. Now overlay the cost of housing, and this become the data shows that this is a cost of housing issue. The more costly your housing, the higher the rates of homelessness. Now there are some exceptions across the country, but it's a good predictor of how many people end up homelessness in your state.
Ted, but people might say, yes, but it's Seattle. The housing costs are through the roof. Is housing insecurity both an urban issue and a rural issue in Washington?
Yeah, it has. It is definitely both. You know, we've been struggling with increasing homelessness for a while now, and I really want to emphasize what was just said about housing price increases. We've seen that. We've been following that for, and it just keeps bearing out. No matter what the community you look at in Washington State, you know, we have some very different. We have different politics in the state, red and blue, particularly divided by the mountain range that we have. And you're seeing that you'll see a community that had formerly lower priced housing. And then as they've seen the surge of income and an influx of population, they've seen increases in homelessness despite the, you know, on the surface different policies. It's just that price is so overwhelming. And it is important. There are other factors for certain. And the price is really an important thing that we're pushing to get a handle on. And, you know, in the last legislative session, you know, the leadership of the governor, there was a strong push to open up our land use policy to not be so restrictive in the number and types of units that can be built. So now every county now has a target on the number of units that they need to accommodate. So it's not everyone having a static environment where things don't get built. And then in that low supply environment, prices just get bid up and fewer people can afford to live there.
Really monitoring that marketplace, that environment. Michelle in Eau Claire is here. Michelle, go ahead.
Hi, thank you so much. I live and breathe this every day as a volunteer, as a member of an affordable housing task force. We have members who are on our city planning commission and realtors who work with statewide organizations. And we know in Eau Claire County, Wisconsin, we are at 2 to 3% availability for housing at any income level. And ideally, we'd like to be at 6 or 7. So we're feeling the squeeze here, both for folks who are chronically homeless, as well as for families who are just being priced out of the community. If this were easy, we'd have it solved. It's obviously very complicated. And so I appreciate your conversation today.
Michelle, thank you for joining in. Wayne, you know, what are those steps to help solve this workforce housing affordability issue?
Thanks, Kate. I'm a real estate developer and have been for many, many years before I accepted this position, a governor-appointed position in Utah, and have done a lot of housing projects over the years. An accountant by background, I've done hundreds of pro formas on housing. And when I got into this position, and maybe I should mention also that I served in the legislature here in Utah for 12 years. I was the Senate president for 6 of those years. We've turned housing sideways, upside down, to try and figure out how to do housing affordability. Well, I dug into this when I first got into this position. And the reason why we don't have more affordable housing is it doesn't pencil. It will never naturally attract capital. It will have to be subsidized. We have to have programs to help buy down those rents to a more affordable level and create that housing at a more affordable level. And so I worked hard with our legislature over the last 2 years and have developed a couple of programs. Now, it's been funded with one-time money, so we need an ongoing program here. What we have is a deeply affordable housing grant program and a rent support program in order to help reduce those costs for not only people experiencing homelessness, but workforce housing. And, you know, that's 60% area median income and below. Homelessness is 30% AMI, area median income and below. And it's going to take these kind of programs for us to have that kind of housing. And they have to be supply oriented. And so our programs will increase supply of housing because, as Ted mentioned also, this is a supply issue in a big way.
Wayne Niederhauser is the state homeless coordinator in Utah. Ted Kelleher with us works on housing policy at the Washington State Department of Commerce. As we talk about efforts to address housing insecurity in other states, what we can learn here in Wisconsin, you can be part of the conversation. Call in with a question, share comments, 800-642-1234. Ted, I want to turn to this landlord mitigation program. Wisconsin authorities are interested in establishing a program like this one that you have in Washington State. How does Washington State's program work? How is it doing?
Yeah, thank you. That's a program that was created a couple of years before the pandemic and then was expanded to the pandemic to deal with some of the issues that were specific to that. Basically, what it has a number of facets. That central program is if you're renting, if you're a private for-profit landlord renting to someone who's receiving a subsidy, a housing choice voucher, sometimes known as a Section 8 voucher, or maybe some other state assistance to get you moved into housing. If you're housing one of those tenants and you there's some damage to your unit, the state will reimburse the damage to that unit. So to the extent that there's a perception that there's increased risk of renting to people with lower incomes and maybe some poor rental histories, the state will provide a backstop. And in some ways, it's frankly an incentive because we'll also pay some back rent. It's an incentive over typical other sorts of renters. It's very hard, oftentimes it's additional work to use a subsidy, a government subsidy, particularly a federal one. So we're really just trying to smooth that path and to reduce the risk that landlords might experience. And it does work quite well, but the issue with it is there's just a shortage of units, period. So even we have situations in communities where, smaller communities where nurses, for instance, make good money, sometimes up six-figure money, and they're living in hotels when they first get the job, and eventually they just leave the job because there just isn't the supply out there, even in our rural communities. We really need more.
Wayne, how is Utah working with private management companies and landlords in order to make these units more accessible?
We're focused on supply because we've been a growth state here in Utah. Idaho and Utah, I think, are the fastest growing states in population over the last several years, have very low unemployment. This is our challenge. And our housing costs have increased double digit. So this is a good thing in many ways, but also a challenge because we have to deal with the affordable housing and so supply. And so our programs, our deeply affordable housing grants, our attainable housing grants are all oriented to increase the supply of housing. And also at the same time, reducing that cost of new supply or that new supply, deed restricting it for 50 years so that remains affordable for, decades to come.
Generations to come. Wayne Niederhauser there, Utah's homeless coordinator. We have Ted Kelleher with us, Washington State Department of Commerce's Housing Division Policy Director, as we dig into programs, efforts to end homelessness, focusing on two Western states right now to help inform the view here from Wisconsin. Be part of the discussion. Call in with a question. Share your perspectives. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We discuss homelessness, how best to help families find stable housing in Wisconsin, getting perspective now from efforts in Washington and Utah. Ted Kelleher is at the Washington State Department of Commerce's Housing Division, and Wayne Niederhauser is state homeless coordinator for Utah, and you can add your voice to the conversation, calling in to ask a question, sharing your views, 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Julia in Madison. Julia, go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having this topic. It's very dear to my heart. I live here in Madison. I've reached out to the mayor of Madison, particularly about affordable housing for seniors. And I want to invite the folks that are on your show today, as well as listeners, to look up the Wall Street Journal, Wednesday, September 13th. There is a two-page story, More Baby Boomers Becoming Homeless. And it says, baby boomers who transform society in so many ways are now we are seeing dramatic effect on homelessness because of various things, various reasons. But just like here in Madison, not willing to address the issue that there is not affordable housing for seniors.
Julia, I want to toss this to the guest to look at how First Washington approaches seniors and retired people and affordable housing. What do you see there, Ted?
Yeah, you know, I think I've really been talking about supply, and I want to really emphasize, you know, some of what was described from Utah about the need for a subsidy, and this applies, you know, for seniors for sure, and any population that's not in group of people that's not engaged in active employment. You know, the good news in many places in Washington too, are as the incomes have grown, people who are, you know, able to participate in that working environment are doing okay in the middle. You know, median incomes are at six figures and climbing. When you actually look at the ratio of incomes to rent payments and housing purchase prices, you know, setting aside the last year, which is an anomaly, which we probably don't have time to get into, you know, we're actually seeing an increase in affordability. That said, you know, not everyone is able to work all the time. And seniors are a classic example. You know, seniors, citizens in our state who have worked hard their whole life, they've, you know, they worked in a certain economic environment where incomes were a certain way. They saved up to match that environment. And then the world around them changed where everything was all of a sudden surging prices and surging populations. And it's really important that we address that. And one of the things we've seen is that our affordable housing and homeless programs can work. We see, you know, more than 80-90% success rates to the extent we're able to provide a subsidy to someone. But we have to be able to provide that subsidy, and we're just not doing it at scale. And we can increase the supply, and that's critical to be even have the places to put the affordable housing units. But without a subsidy, it just never pencils out. Now you might be able to pencil out where it's someone at the higher ends of lower income is able to afford. If we increase supply, it'll naturally bring the prices down 10-20%. But for those lower income people like seniors, we really need to increase our subsidies. What we see, we've done a lot of research over the last decade. We can see what works, but we just need to do it at scale. And that's part of what the push in Washington State is, to take what we've done and bring it to scale.
You know, I wonder in Utah, Wayne Niederhauser, what comes up for you when thinking about seniors?
Thanks, Kate. Here's a dynamic that's taking place, and it's too frequent. And that is, we have deed restricted properties that age out of that deed restriction. This is 30 years ago, because low income housing tax credits were about 30 years. And now in Utah, they're 50 years. So, you know, we've improved upon that, but these programs 30 years ago now are aging out. And so we have units then that all of a sudden become market rate. And many of our folks with fixed incomes are in those units and now are faced with market rate rents versus a subsidized rate and can end up in homelessness. And this is taking place because we're not replacing those units as fast as they are aging. Well, with our programs, we are increasing that ability to address that. But the scale issue, as Ted mentioned, is important. It's got to be at scale. So our elderly folks are not ending up in homelessness. So one thing we did here in Utah was create a fund that now can go in and help put those properties back in a deed restriction and in a subsidized rate. Again, though, it's not to scale to reduce that completely, but it is helping maintain some of that housing in a deed restricted situation for more years.
Ted, Washington is also addressing highway encampments, and you say that in recent years, upwards of 600 people were living near highways. Where are those people now?
Yeah, thank you. We already knew this going in based on our research, but it's always good to, you know, see, practice what you see in reality, see if it works in reality. So there was, you know, it's during the COVID, there was, you know, a specific directive from the federal CDC to not clear encampments. So in Washington State, and I'm guessing around the rest of the country too, some very large encampments grew on the sides of our highways. The governor had a particular focus on addressing those as the pandemic wound down. We're actually now up to 900 people that we've moved into housing. When we go to an encampment, we spend a few weeks with leading with engagement with outreach workers, building a relationship, building some trust, and then offering them a shelter opportunity. And as long as we're offering the right shelter opportunities, we're seeing over 80% move into that housing and stay into that housing opportunity. So the vast majority of the people now, more than 900, have moved into housing and are staying in housing.
Wayne, what about the future of tiny homes? Has Utah made inroads there?
Salt Lake City has approved a tiny home project in an area that they've designated, and there'll be about 400 of those over the next, it's going to take a couple of years for those units to come online. But that's an effort that we're at least experimenting with right now.
Do you think that will pencil, so to speak? Do you think that will open up more housing options and be sustainable?
Yes, it will. That's going to reduce the cost. But here's another issue, Kate, that when you're dealing with homelessness, this is not a workforce housing issue, but when you're dealing with homelessness, you have to have the support services with the housing for the housing to be successful. The services and housing go together. One does not work without the other, because so many of these individuals, because of substance abuse issues and mental health issues, need that support in housing.
You need that wraparound support. Yeah. Yes. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Ted Kelleher is at the Washington State Department of Commerce's Housing Division. Wayne Niederhauser is State Homeless Coordinator for Utah. Earlier in the conversation, we were focusing on Wisconsin with Michael Bassford. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the Ideas Network.